Today I want to follow up on what we were working on last week. The first thing to really understand is that parents are the ones that are responsible for teaching their children about God and what He commands us. Now, there's a lot of other people be involved in your children's lives that will assist in that. There will be Sunday school teachers and children's church teachers and Awana and youth group or whatever else that they get involved in. There will be special people along the way that just mentor them. They've gotten involved. There'll be other families. But no matter what other assistance you get, the parents are the ones that are responsible. And so it's important you understand those responsibilities so you can fulfill them. Now, that means that maybe sometimes you will seek that assistance because you realize you don't have the skill right there. But it's still your responsibility. Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9 points out that to accomplish this, though, that first you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength, and then be diligent to teach your children about the Lord in all the common activities of life. When you sit, when you stand in your house, when you walk by the way, whatever you're doing, you need to be talking about the Lord and pointing Him and His character out and His commands to your children. Well, over the last couple of months, I have focused on specific areas of responsibility that we have towards God and that we're responsible to instill into our children. Things like fulfilling your role in marriage. We're all to honor our parents. Children are to obey their parents, their young children. We have responsibility towards siblings, and so we should teach our children to be friends. Teach them to work with each other, to help one another, rather than being competitive and becoming rivals. Instill into them a love for helping and encouraging. We have responsibilities to the extended family and society too. We should respect and honor those who are aged. We help extended family as we can when it's needed. We give respect and honor to authorities according to their office. We're to be humble people. We're to treat others with courtesy. And those of the opposite sex, we treat as a brother or sister in all purity. We teach these things to our children because they reflect the responsibilities God has placed on us, and so He's placed on them as well. When they get adults, they will have all these responsibilities too. Now, last week began to examine what you're to teach your children regarding property, both their own and that of others. I want to finish that and then go on to another aspect of property. We talked about tangible possessions last week, but there are some other issues that are also property, other things that are property. Now, remember, property is simply that which a person owns or which they have over which they have a right. And so it includes both physical objects and intangible ones, non-physical objects, such as time and reputation. The market value of anything is set by what people will sell a similar item for in the marketplace. However, the actual value of property is determined by the owner, and it is signified by what they're willing to trade for it. And that may be above or it may be below the market value. Sentimental value or a lack of it may make the item priceless to them or worthless. So there's an intangible side even to intangible possessions. Labor and time have direct relationship to value. You know, let's face it, if you make something yourself, it's a lot more valuable to you than something that that you just bought that was manufactured. You really don't have a whole lot invested into it. But if you did that by hand, you value that thing. Whatever it may be, it's that factor of time and labor that makes a monetary value more important to the poor than to the wealthy. Let's face it, if you make $20,000 a year, $5,000 is a lot of money. If you make $120,000 a year, $5,000 is like, oh well, right? A lot of you are like, gee, I wish I could treat $5,000 that way. Now, people tend to think they have the right to do anything they want with what they have a right of possession. And that would be true if you actually possessed anything. The problem is we actually don't. And nothing we have does not have an effect on somebody else to some degree somewhere. When your property or your use of that property starts affecting other people, then there has to start being consideration for those other people. I point out last week, like with if you're going to play a stereo loud, Well, you can play your stereo loud until it bothers your neighbors. But what about if it starts causing you to become deaf? Is that just bothering you? No, because it's going to bother everybody else in the future who's going to try to talk with you, and they can't communicate because you can't hear them, right? So even your own body, you don't have complete control, because what you do with it and how you damage it will affect everybody else. So you have to have consideration for other people. And then ultimately, you really don't own anything because you're only borrowing it. The few short years, your life on this earth, you get to use of it, and then it's passed on to somebody else. And ultimately, God owns everything. And you are accountable to Him. That means you're actually not an owner, you're a steward. And stewards have responsibilities, not rights. That's 1 Corinthians 4:2. God will hold you accountable for what He's entrusted to you. Now, there are two main ways in which you teach your children about their responsibility to property: your example and what you require of them. Now, your example is fairly obvious. Your children are naturally going to learn to treat property the way they see you treating property. And that includes your attitudes towards property as well. This is why giving thanks or having a gratefulness to God is so important. Every good thing we've received came from where? The Father of lights. Our God has provided it for us, James 1:17. Gratefulness is a key component of worship. Words thanks and thanksgiving occur 61 times in the Psalms alone. We're to find ways to give thanks to God in everything, including the midst of turmoil, trouble. Why? It's part of the sacrifice of praise that we're told about in Hebrews 13:15. That attitude transfers to your children. Are they grateful? If you're grateful for something, you treat it differently for something that you don't care about, that you're not grateful for, right? Ever get gifts at Christmas or your birthday or something, and one you think is really great and the other you care less about? We all know what happens to those things, right? Are you grateful for what God has given you? Be content, another attitude. And that's be content whether you have a lot or a little. Paul said in Philippians 4 that he learned to be content. It's not automatic. It takes some work, but you learn to be content. 1 Timothy 6:6 or 8 says we need to learn to be content. If we have shelter and we have food, we've got enough. But we always want something else. Proverbs 25:16 has a very interesting statement about contentment. Now think about this one. Have you found honey? Eat only what you need, that you not have it in excess and vomit it. I realize that's one of those proverbs everybody's memorized, right? Can't wait to use it. It's talking about contentment. You need to be able to assess what you actually need and then be satisfied with that and teach your children to do likewise. If you do not, you will end up going into gluttony, and the resources you should have had to share with others, God has provided to you to share with those who have need, have now used up in your selfishness. You weren't content. And it even came back and haunted you. In this case, too much honey, and you got sick off it. Gratefulness, contentment, they have a direct impact on the manner in which you treat possessions. You are more careful for that which you're thankful, less careful for things you don't like. And when you're content, you're also more careful. Now, your example is important, but it's not going to be enough alone. Foolishness, we're told in Proverbs 22:15, is bound up in the heart of the child. Therefore, you must instruct the child diligently. You have to be on top of it. How do you properly care for property? What are you going to require from them? Do not allow them to abuse property. If it is their own property, they need to learn early that proper use and care of property is the only means by which they can gain the benefits of it. Right? We all learned that early on. We had a toy, we were enjoying it, and it broke. No more joy. In fact, a lot of sadness and tears. Well, the same thing continues on as we get to be adults. We love our car until it breaks, right? And then we don't like it anymore. We have to care for things if we're going to be able to get the value out of it. Abusing a toy may seem inconsequential, but understand the pattern for life is set at that early stage. If you allow them to do that, what will they do with their car when they're older? What will they do with the machinery they have, or the equipment, or the household appliances, or anything else? Or how about people? Set the stage early. Require proper use. Now, there are several proverbs that tie well to care for personal property. They're kind of interesting. Now, these focus on animals and plants. Now, that was the major source of wealth in the ancient world. But the same principles apply to other property. Consider these. The first is Proverbs 12:10. They're listed down there on the screen for you. A righteous man has regard for the life of his animal, but even the compassion of the wicked is cruel. Righteousness, compassion, and if the animal is well taken care of, you get the benefits of the animal, don't you? Proverbs 27:23 through 27 adds this: know well the condition of your flocks. Pay attention to your herds. Riches are not forever, nor does a crown endure all generations. When the grass disappears, the new growth is seen. As the herbs of the mountains are gathered in, the lambs will be for your clothing, the goats will bring the price of the field. There will be goat's milk enough for your food, for the food of your household, and sustenance for your maidens. Now you're all hungry for goat's milk, right? No, maybe not. But we see the point, right? If I have cared for this, I gain the benefit of it. If I have not watched my flocks, I get no benefit. There's nothing left. It's gone. The riches, as he says here, are not forever. They disappear. How do you care for your stuff? Proverbs 28:19 makes the same point. He who tills his land will have plenty of food. He who follows empty pursuits will have poverty in plenty. Proverbs 27:18, he who tends the fig tree will eat its fruit. Who cares for his master will be honored. Are you caring for the things that you're responsible for properly? Now, that's pragmatic, but your property cannot be useful to you if you do not care for it, right? So that's important. Now, that's your property. What about the property of others? That's even more important because it directly reflects your respect for them. And Scripture is very clear. We are to love our neighbors. It was in the Old Testament. Jesus repeated as the second great commandment, Matthew 22:39, to love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus went on to teach us, Matthew 5:44, we're even to love our enemies, not just our neighbors. Now that's significant. What is the practical demonstration of your care, your respect towards others? It's going to come out in one way is, what do you do with their property? What do you do with those things that are loaned to you or that you're using to accomplish some task? You need to instruct your children how to properly care for things. And then if they do not, then you need to let them learn the consequences. Now, it could be natural consequences. It could be they lose it, they damage it, they break it. And in which case, the natural consequences are serious. They're upset, they're sad. Right? It could be something less artificial. It's not as serious, it's an artificial consequence. They lose the privilege of using the property. These are usually given with a warning. You see they're not doing it properly. They're abusing their toy, or they're not using it just the way it should be used. So what do? You warn them, right? Hey, you're not doing it right. You continue that way, you're going to lose the privilege of using it. They don't heed your warning, you take it away. That actually goes for people too. Treat people as precious. If they're not being kind to their friends, you warn them, and if they continue to be unkind, it says then you can't play with them. You lose the privilege of being with other people. Now, this is less serious because you can give them the opportunity later. When you show some responsibility to treat things properly and other people properly, you can regain the privilege. So there's a hope for them. They can continue to work back towards that. But the consequences got to be there. It may be something you need to deal with very quickly. It could be the artificial consequence of a rebuke, verbal rebuke, and a physical chastening. But there has to be consequence in order to learn the lesson. Do not fall into the trap of feeling sorry for them, ignoring what they do, or removing the pain of the consequence. The pain is often where the lesson is learned. And the lesson is more important. That trains the character. Here are some other ways that gets very practical. If they break or lose something that must be replaced, include them in the replacing of it, paying for replacing of it to their ability. Now, obviously, if they are very young and they don't have much, they don't have a means of making much, and it's an expensive item, you're going to have to cover that. But include them in it, at least to some degree, to whatever they can. Figure out some extra chores. I mentioned last week our kids did a lot of rock collecting. Buckets and buckets of rocks. And they started equating labor, value. I better treat things right, otherwise that's 5 buckets of rocks to replace what I just broke. All right? But they started valuing it. You're teaching them character and responsibility towards other people. They need to be part of it. You also have them go and purchase what was broken and they have to replace. You go with them, you have them pay for it, which also they can learn some financial transactions there and how you deal with the marketplace. Then they take it to the person it belonged to and they give it back with an apology. I'm sorry I abused your item. I'm sorry I broke it. Please forgive me. This is the restitution. Now, this principle of restitution is an important one. It's found throughout the Old Testament. Exodus, Leviticus are very detailed about it. In fact, from Exodus 21:34 and 22:5-15, if something was broken or lost, damaged, and it was an accident, the restitution only involved the price of that object. You replaced what you broke, what you lost. That's restitution. If it was done on purpose, then there were additional penalties. If the person lied about it, there was a 20% additional charge that had to be paid. If the person stole it, depending on what it was, the thief had to pay back between 4 to 7 times the amount. Now that makes it a little more serious, doesn't it? Proverbs 6:30-31 talks about that. Now, these penalties in the restitution law shows there is something more important going on here than the market value of the item. Lying and theft are sins against God and the owner of the property. This is why the penalty. It is to reinforce an understanding that people are more important than things, and you've offended the person. Make it right with them. There are other things that you do. Some of this should be just part of common life that teach children, and actually if we do them, it reminds us too, about the practical application of godliness towards things. How about proper manners? Simple things. Say please and thank you. When you do that, you instill humility and a proper respect for people as well as their property. That's pretty simple, isn't it? Please, thank you. And yet in our society, there's less and less and less of that, isn't there? And how do they treat things and other people now? A lot worse. If you carry this further, and you need to, apologies, seeking forgiveness, reconciliation, it carries to a much deeper level. Because what you're after there is the relationships that are being harmed by these actions. Another thing that you can do to help your children learn value and property and treating things correctly. Require them to share most things, not everything, but sharing most things. It trains them in the use of property in being considerate and generous to other people. Proverbs 11:25 says, "The generous man will be prosperous, and he who waters will be himself watered." Proverbs 28:27, "He who gives to the poor will never want, but he who shuts his eyes will have many curses." A contrast there. Ephesians 4:28, which we've pointed out many times here, instructs Christians to steal no longer, but rather to labor, performing with their own hands that which is good, so they might have something to share with those who have need. We are to be generous as Christians. How do you teach generosity? It starts when they're young. Teach them to share their toys. Now, you will also be able to teach children some responsibility of property from the negative side of sharing, because we all realize that not every child that they share their toys with is going to treat that toy properly. You're probably going to have some broken and damaged along the way. Now, that's negative. Now, this gives you several opportunities. One is to teach your children what to do when they feel this great urge to seek revenge. None of you have ever seen that happen, right? Never been part of your life. That's normal. So here's the opportunity. Here's how you start dealing with it. Help them while they're young. Instill into this so it becomes part of their character. Instill into them, we follow a different way of living. Have them memorize Matthew 7:12. We call that the golden rule. How do you treat other people? You treat other people the way you would like them to treat you, not the way you have been treated. Different concept, isn't it? That's what you need to do with your young children. How did you do this? Because you had them start sharing. Now, let me quickly add here that you may have to intervene with children that are abusive to what's being shared with them. You may have to rebuke them. You may have to restrict what your kids share with them. Your goal is to teach your children about sharing and treating property properly, not to make them targets for abusive people. Do you see the big difference here? Make sure the parents also know the problems you're having with their child when, and how they're treating the property, so the parent can make the proper corrections to their own child. And frankly, if the parent gets mad at you for telling them there's a negative thing about their child, understand something. That's not a family you're probably going to be very close to. These people are proud. They're going the way of foolishness. Be gracious with them. Well, you still have to reach out to people and try and show them the way of righteousness, but understand this is where their character's showing. I've never met a family that has perfect kids. They don't exist. And so we are going to hear from other parents and other individuals, you know, your child did this. Don't be that surprised. Guess who they came from? And you're a sinner, okay? So it's going to happen. Say thank you. Assess what's going on, and give them the proper corrections. The goal is that we become godly people, not protect our pride, because isn't that really what it boils down to? So let's be careful there. Now, at the same time you're requiring them to share things, make sure even the young child has a few special items they don't have to share. Now, why? One, it gives you the opportunity to gain an insight into their heart. If they do not have to share this, then when they do share it, you know what's going on in their heart, don't you? And you want those opportunities. Are you seeing the fruit of righteousness in their life? The other thing that it allows them to do is learn discernment. That's a special item, and they're going to be able to discern, who can I trust with this? And who can I not trust with that? That's something we all have to know as adults. There are a lot of things we're happy to trust certain people with nearly anything, everything. And there's others, we don't trust them a bit, and most people are in between. That's discernment. This allows them the opportunity to start learning at an early age, discernment. Now again, being generous and sharing does not mean allowing other people to abuse your property. That actually is poor stewardship. What about wealth? Teaching your children about property, you need to teach them about wealth. Let's face it, we live in a very materialistic, hedonistic society, and so this lesson becomes even more important for us. I've already talked about giving thanks and being content, which deal with a proper response to the possessions you have. You also have to teach them about having a right attitude towards getting those things. Now, people no longer do business on a handshake because there's been such a moral decay in our ethics in our society. We now try to hold people responsible with long contracts and teams of lawyers, hoping they will still carry through with their word. Lying, cheating, stealing, graft, corruption, they become common. Highest levels of business, highest levels of government, this stuff is there. I think they're calling it crony capitalism, but in view of the takeovers of the auto industry, bank industry, health industry, it may be more crony fascism or communism. But it's corruption, isn't it? How are your children going to stand firm in righteousness in this kind of society? They have to have the right attitude to begin with. And that means you and your family are going to need the fortitude to stand alone on God's moral high ground, even if everybody else is wading around in the unethical swamp surrounding you. We'll talk more about this in the future when we get the subject of economics and what Proverbs says about that. For today, just understand, teach your children to be honest and just in all their business regardless of what anybody else is doing. They need to set the standard of righteousness in what they do. Proverbs 11:1 says, a false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. Are they going to go the path that our world is going of the abominations? Or are they going to go what is right and justice? Proverbs 10:2-4, ill-gotten gains do not profit, but righteousness delivers from death. The Lord will not allow the righteous to hunger, but he will reject the craving of the wicked. Poor is he who works with a negligent hand, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. Now someone may say, but hey, wait a minute. There are some wicked people out there, unethical people out there, that are very rich. They seem to be doing very well. That's true. There's no doubt about it. George Soros is a very immoral, wicked man and a very wealthy man. Asaph saw the same thing, and he wrote about it in Psalm 73. And he said his feet almost came to stumbling until he came back to the house of the Lord and he realized their end. He concluded here is, the final accounting is not now. It will come when they stand before God's throne. In verse 27 of that psalm, he said, behold, those who are far from you, referring to God, will perish. You have destroyed all of those who are unfaithful to you. Don't think the accounting necessarily is going to show up in this life. More often than not, it does. But there are those exceptions. They still are going to be held accountable. Proverbs also gives five sources for wealth for the righteous. Here's the kinds of attitudes your children need to have. Honoring the Lord is the first source of wealth. Proverbs 3, 9, and 10. Honor the Lord from your wealth and from all the first of your produce, so your barns will be filled with plenty, your vats will overflow with new wine. How about humility? Proverbs 22, 4. The reward of humility and the fear of the Lord are riches, honor, and life. How about righteousness? Proverbs 15, 6. Great wealth is in the house of the righteous, but trouble is in the income of the wicked. Fourth is wisdom. Proverbs 3, 13 through 15. How blessed is the man who finds wisdom, and the man who gains understanding, for her profit is better than the profit of silver, her gain better than fine gold. She is more precious than jewels. Nothing you desire compares with her. With what? With wisdom. And hard work. Proverbs 13:11, wealth obtained by fraud dwindles, but the one who gathers by labor increases it. Stealing, graft, corruption, unethical business practices, they're the opposite of all these things. They dishonor God, they show a lack of trust in him, they arise out of pride, and they follow the world's foolishness instead of hard work. We teach our children the right attitude towards wealth. Because there's a whole lot of things a lot more important than being wealthy or having any kind of riches. How about wisdom itself? That's better than wealth. Proverbs 16:16, how much better it is to get wisdom than gold, and to get understanding is to be chosen above silver. Quote that proverb next time one of these gold salesmen calls you. Righteousness, Proverbs 16:8, better is a little with righteousness than great income with injustice. Integrity, Proverbs 28:6, better is the poor who walks in his integrity than he who is crooked, though he be rich. And reputation, Proverbs 22:1, a good name is to be more desired than great wealth. Favor is better than silver and gold. So we are to be responsible for our own possessions and those of others, but ultimately we're responsible for all these things before God. And we're going to have to give account to him of stewardship. We also have to have the same kind of attitude when it comes to our time and our reputation. Those are also properties that belong to us, but they're intangible. Now, time, if you think about it, is the most precious commodity of life. Why? It is the most restricted. You may be able to acquire more wealth. You cannot acquire more time. Time is the only thing in which all people are equal because it is allotted out to all men at exactly the same rate. The difference between men is how they use that time. The wise will use it responsibly, and the foolish will squander it. Now, we use financial terms for time, things like spend, save, invest, but you can only use time as it comes. You can't put time in a bank to save it for later. It doesn't work that way. It just simply keeps passing by like a river. We talk about saving time. We're actually referring to about, can we do something more efficiently so we can do the same thing in a less amount of time so that the future time that would have been used for doing this is now available to do something else that you'd like to do. You would not have been able to do otherwise. That's the only thing we mean by saving time, because you can't put it in the bank. It's just simply flowing by. You simply use it. You might invest time now in learning to do something more efficiently so you will not spend as much time on doing that same thing in the future, but you're still just using the time. And you use time either wisely or foolishly. You're either responsible or you're irresponsible use of time. Now, Scripture actually says quite a bit about time. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, 1 through 11 explains there's appointed time for everything. And it's a beautiful passage. At the end of it, verse 11, he says, God has made everything appropriate to its time. Part of wisdom is discerning the appropriate time for doing something. That takes wisdom. Ephesians 5:16 directs us to redeem or make the most of time because the days are evil. We are responsible to take advantage of the opportunities that God makes available to us. Our responsible use of time is seen in contrast between its wise use by the diligent and its foolish use by the lazy. The hand of the diligent makes rich while and will rule, while those of the negligent will be poor and be put to forced labor. Proverbs 10:4 and 12:24. The soul of the diligent, we are told in Proverbs 13:4, is made fat, while the sluggard craves and gets nothing. Proverbs 15:19 tells us the way of a lazy man is a hedge of thorns. That's referring to obstacles, constant obstacles. There's always something blocking him from getting it. But it goes on, it says the path of the upright is a highway. In other words, he's going to find a way to get there, and he's moving forward. Proverbs 22:13 is an interesting one. It says, the sluggard says, there's a lion in the street. Now, there's always some excuse. There was no lion in the street. It's just, there's something dangerous out there. I can't go out there. Always something to give an excuse for not doing their work. And yet the diligent overcomes obstacles and they progress in it. The lazy man values his nap over his work, and so as Proverbs 6:9-11 says, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. And so his poverty will come in like a vagabond and your need like an armed man. Now that does not imply that the diligent does not need sleep and rest. I pointed out in a previous sermon, even the Lord needed that. It does mean that we will use our time, our leisure, wisely. You do not teach your children in the wise use of time by watching the clock and rigid scheduling. You teach them to be responsible in the use of time by teaching them the priorities of life and how to keep those in proper order. Scheduling would not be helpful unless it is assisting you to keep the priorities. That's the only reason scheduling is helpful. What are your priorities? Are you going to keep them? A schedule is simply a budget for time. Be careful of those things and people that can use up your time foolishly. And do not be someone who does that to others. Now, I've learned quite a bit about this in my years as a pastor. I admit there are some people who think I work one day a week and I have some time, so I'll just go see what the pastor's doing. Well, I like social calls. I like people dropping by. But all those things have to be balanced with the responsibilities I have as a pastor and as a husband and as a father and all the other stuff you have to do and just trying to keep life going, right? You have to balance those things. And here's just a couple tips I've learned I use to keep my priorities. One, I screen my phone calls. I learned a long time ago, I'm not under obligation to answer every time somebody calls, especially the salesmen, the solicitors. I have an answering machine that I actually hear who's calling first. It was worth the money over and over and over again to know I don't even have to get up. I'm not getting near the thing. I don't even have to listen to the message when it comes on. It's just deleted immediately. I don't want nothing to do with it. I sort my email and my mail into categories so there's trash. There are things I probably should look at, and there's things I must look at. Then I go back in reverse order in the must look at, and if there's any time, I might get to the should look at. Now, over the course of time, that should look at pile gets pretty big. My office shows it. There's a lot of should look at piles around my office. And you know what? I'm very comfortable with it now. I figured something out. I've studied the scriptures for a long time. I've yet to find anything that says there's a reward in heaven for those who leave a clean office. Instead, I have a cross stitch. Now, I don't remember now if it was Diane or my mom made this for me some years ago. Proverbs 14:4, where no oxen are, the manger is clean, but much increase comes through the strength of the ox. I like that, even if it means I'm an ox. But it does get an excuse for my office. I've learned some things that my priorities are what has to be kept. The priorities God has given me, those things that are set according to his word for my family, those things are important to me, not everybody else's priorities. And that's very freeing. What are your priorities? Teach your children about priorities and what God has said, and they will learn to do that. Be very careful also about things that might end up wasting your time. And there's a whole lot of things that might be fine to do, but are they really helping you towards what your God-given priorities are and actually the things you'd like to accomplish in life? Remember, Hebrews 13:1 tells us to lay aside every encumbrance as well as the sin which so easily entangles us. Now, an encumbrance is not a sin. It could be a very good thing. It's just that it's not helpful in running the race. Teach your children a responsible use of time, that they set priorities and learn to keep those things. As I pointed out a couple of weeks ago, most people in the society have great amounts of leisure time. Use that time wisely. You need leisure in order to physically rest, be mentally refreshed, but leisure is also the opportunity to improve your walk with Christ. It is not a license to do that which is detrimental to your spiritual health, which tragically, I find that even most Christians use their leisure time for that. They spend a whole lot of it doing things that are actually detrimental to their spiritual health. And then one last one, property, is reputation. Intangible property for which we're responsible. We're told in Proverbs 3:4 that if you search out wisdom and follow her, you will find favor and be of good reputation before God and men. So again, we get this tie back of wisdom. Proverbs 22:1 states, a good name is to be more desired than great wealth. Favor is better than silver and gold. Ecclesiastes 7:1 states that a good name is better than good ointment. It's an important item. These verses express there's a great value in having good reputation. In fact, it's so important as a mark of maturity that we find it's a requirement for church leadership, for elders. 1 Timothy 3:7. Now understand that a good reputation is something that is earned. It is not given to you. A good reputation is built on integrity and consistency in your own actions. Do you realize that in Luke 2:52 it says that Jesus continued to grow in wisdom and stature and favor with God and men? His reputation increased. In the years of his ministry, his reputation increased. It grew. It wasn't automatic. He earned it. And so a good reputation, earned over time, maintained with diligence, and yet it's something, though it can take you years to build, it can be lost in a moment, in a slip, an indiscretion, in a moment of weakness. There are plenty of men that started very well and did well for many years, but they ended badly because of some failure, and it changed their reputation. The name Benedict Arnold is a synonym for traitor in the United States. So much so that most people do not even know that he was the hero of the Battle of Saratoga. Important for us because that battle secured the mid-Hudson area for the Americans. Otherwise, the British would have just come right on down. He was the hero, but we only know him as the traitor. He started well, he ended very badly. There are plenty of politicians that have spent decades earning a good reputation only to lose in the end because of some failure. More tragic are the many pastors that have done the same kind of thing. Years of ministry destroyed by a sinful choice that shamed them and the Savior. Set your goal to be someone who's going to end well. And isn't that the hope of the gospel? We start as sinners, don't we? Every single one of us. But we can end as saints. We can fight the good fight, remain faithful, keep the course to the very end, as Paul did in 2 Timothy 4:7. That becomes the goal. God is in the business of transforming lives. Teach your children to be diligent in their walk with the Lord so they're going to end well. They're in a journey. Don't let them get so bogged down with the current turmoil and their failures that they forget where they're going. We're going someplace. We're not there yet. And we're helping each other along the way. Sometimes we've got to give each other some crutches, but we're helping each other along the way to have a good end. Maintaining a good reputation requires diligence, consistency, because you're going to be attacked. You're going to be attacked by the unrighteous, and according to Philippians 1, don't be surprised when those who you thought were brothers in Christ, sisters in Christ, and maybe they well be, but they are so immature, they also are attacking. Paul was so attacked. When you strive to walk in righteousness, you upset other people. Jesus said to expect that, Matthew 5:10-12. Now, the natural human response is to be defensive and seek revenge, but we need to prove our reputation by doing what is right regardless. Peter deals with that, 1 Peter, about preparing for persecution. This is one of his admonitions in 1 Peter 2:15. Do what is right regardless of how you've been attacked and slandered. And so we're to put our enemies to shame by proving ourselves beyond reproach by our good deeds, our purity of doctrine, our dignity, our sound speech, Titus 2:7-8, because Timothy struggled with that. Now, those are not easy lessons. They're hard to put into practice, but they are the locks that keep others from stealing from us our good name by their slander. I have found over and over again that only a consistency and humility has been my protection, because I get slandered. You should expect to be slandered. What will be your protection? Only your character. Teach your children these things early because they need to be able to remain faithful and withstand the persecution that will come upon them when they do what is right. And yes, it does start at an early age. It can start at a very early age of other kids who will do all sorts of mean things, and it will continue on through life. Teach them to value their own reputation and that of others too. That means they need to refrain from slandering others or joining in the gossip circles. And yes, gossip circles exist in churches. They form periodically here at this church as well. We try and figure them out and break up the circles, but they still exist. You understand a slanderer is a fool who reveals secrets, and in doing so they cause strife and friendship. So Proverbs 10:18, 16:28, 20:19, they all deal with that. We're going to have a sermon just on the use of the tongue. The godly man does not slander with his tongue. He doesn't do evil to his neighbor. He doesn't take up reproach against his friend. That's when the character of the man who can come into the house of God, Psalm 15:3. Teach your children instead to follow the things we're told in Ephesians 4, to be kind, to be tender-hearted, forgiving in spirit, seeking to build each other up by speaking the truth in love. These are characteristics that teach them to value other people, to respect other people, and therefore glorify God. That's a proper use of property. Now, all these responsibilities we need to fulfill in our own lives first, too, right? That's the only way we're going to be able to teach it to our children. And by God's grace, His grace to us and our children, we can accomplish those things. But also understand it's by God's grace, when we fail, I don't say if, when you fail, and you will, it is God's grace that extends to us in Christ so that we're forgiven. And God's grace surrounds us by other forgiven sinners who are all on the same path trying to reach a good end. Let's make sure that's where our goals are.